Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Jeff Nielsen, also known as Captain Jeff, as I am an airline pilot, a captain for a major U.S. legacy airline based in Atlanta. And joining me today to talk about travel tips, we have from the West Coast of the United States, Miss Lisa Hendy, who happens to be the founder and editor of CatholicMom.com and best-selling author of Chime Travelers Children's Fiction Series, The Grace of Yes, The Handbook for Catholic Moms, A Book of Saints for Catholic Moms, and probably about two or three dozen more books that, I don't have a list of all of them here because then we'd take the whole darn show. In other words, she is a very prolific Catholic author and a speaker and traveler, et cetera. Welcome, Lisa.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Hi, everybody. Glad to be here. And I'm actually home today. So
that's awesome.
That's exciting.
Oh, and you're on Catholic television and Catholic radio. You're everywhere.
Yeah.
The joke is that anytime that anybody mentions Lisa's name, I always say, Lisa who? And also joining us from Oklahoma, we have Steve Nelson, who is a pilgrim, an adventurer, a missionary, teacher, learner, polythinker. I'll have to tell us about that. And also
reading my bio,
a world traveler. And he is the host of the website everythingesteban.com. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
We're happy to have you with us. And finally, last but not least, we have Sarah Vabulous. She works in the digital marketing software industry now. But after hours, she's a Catholic geek, a homebrewer, and beer connoisseur at Catholic Drinky. She's also an author, the Catholic Drinky's Guide to Homebrewed Evangelism. And she's also a prolific traveler as well. So welcome, Sarah.
Oh, thanks for inviting me on. I'm super excited to talk about travel. It gets me really pumped.
Well, when I thought about travel, I thought about all of you because, and I'm an airline pilot and I do a lot of traveling, but I think you guys travel more than I do, at least farther abroad than I do. So we thought it'd be a good idea because there are a lot of people that watch the show, a lot of people in the SQPN community that travel quite a bit, and thought it'd be a nice little discussion about travel tips from some seasoned travelers. So to start it off, why don't we talk about, here's a big one. How about when you book travel, do you, if you have to make a connection, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. Some of us, if we're living in the Atlanta area, we don't normally have to make any connections because we can pretty much go nonstop just about everywhere. But if you live in, let's say, Fresno, California, or Tulsa, Stillwater, Oklahoma, you have to make connections. And when you're doing so, do you, either of you, take the time or the energy effort to ensure that you have a reasonable amount of time between flights? Or do you just say, whatever the airline tells me, that's what I'm going to do?
Steve, you want to go first?
Oh, I'll go first, yeah. Most of the time, I just take what the airline gives me. But it just kind of depends on the airport where I have to make the connections, on whether or not I think I can, what they've suggested is reasonable or not. Because you start to learn that there are certain airports where, if you come in at gate 2 and you have to leave at gate 46 at a completely different terminal and they give you 15 minutes to get there, might sound reasonable, but, a lot of us know that that's at certain airports. Atlanta is one that I always, I always try to get extra time because the way the terminal is set up, you have to ride a train most of the time. DFW is the same way. So I always look at what the airline gives me and try to determine if it sounds reasonable or not. And they're given the time of day too. If it's rush hour time, yeah.
How about you, Lisa?
I sort of have this whole strategy over this because I fly out of Fresno. So there's a few complicating factors. The first is in the winter, I fly with the threat of fog. So that creates a whole level of excitement for travel adventures. And I'm lucky if I only have one connection. I frequently have two connections. And I frequently do what I refer to as the Denver Dash because I fly United, which connects a lot through Denver. And seems to have no means of getting from one remote end to the other except literally running. So I always do two things. I always book the first flight out in the morning when I'm flying from home to someplace to accommodate for the fact that I'm possibly going to miss my connection. And I do stay with my airline of choices because now that I have a certain level of status, they actually kind of back me up automatically, which has been just a godsend on so many occasions to land and to know that I'm already backed up. Has, you know, really taken a lot of the headaches out. So I'll sit, you know, anywhere on the plane, hopefully towards the front so I can get off quickly. But I always really try to stay on my main airline for that reason because of connections.
Yeah. I mean, when I have to make connections, which coming out of Atlanta, unless I'm going to visit friends in smaller towns or whatnot, if I'm going to a big city, it's not an issue. But depending on the airport, I try to figure out like, oh, could it be fun to hang out there for a couple hours? Or, you know, for me also, a lot of times I'm booking some of my own travel. So I try to find a good price and, you know, what really works. But some airports, I don't mind hanging out because I go to the Delta Sky Clubs because I have a Delta credit card that I got that gets me into the Sky Clubs. And so I don't mind if I have to have a little bit longer connection because I have a nice, comfortable place to be that has some snacks. You know, I could get a drink or, you know, there's Wi-Fi and comfortable seating. So, you know, things to consider when you fly is, you know, like, do you have a place to go that's comfortable to sit for an extra hour if it could save you, you know, $50 to $100?
Mm-hmm. I've learned the benefits. I fly American a lot. And so the Admiral's Club. My rule of thumb is if I have to spend more than 3 hours in an airport, then I'll pay the $50 to go into the Admiral's Club just because it's so much more peaceful, so much more quiet, and it really takes the stress off. But I'm like Lisa as well. During the winter, I always fly out of Tulsa or Oklahoma City, and I always have to go to a hub. And it could be Dallas, Houston, Chicago, Detroit, or Denver. Those are the main ones. So in the winter, I try to avoid the winter hubs. And in the summer, I try to avoid Dallas, particularly because they have a lot of pop-up thunderstorms late in the afternoon. And so I try to avoid DFW during the summer if I can. So, but yeah, I had forgotten that little aspect there.
Yeah, Lisa, your tip of take the first flight out, spot on. Yeah. I always try to take as early as possible, if not the very first, because sometimes I'm like, wow, I have to get up at what time? You know, take the earlier morning flights. It totally helps with decreasing delays because the later in the day you get, the more likely that you've got a delay somewhere. So crew's going to get held up. This, you know, an aircraft could get held up, all sorts of situations.
Yep. Yeah. If there are going to be problems, and there usually are, you know, whether they're weather related, maintenance related, crew connection related, it's just going to get worse as the day goes on. So whether you're connecting or not, always try to take the earliest flight that you can. It's great. A great tip. And I always tell people if you can, you know, when you're picking your flights, and make sure that connection time is at least an hour, especially if you're going through a big airport like Atlanta or Chicago or, you know, Dallas, Houston, whatever.
Plus, hey, Jeff, good food.
Oh, I'm curious what you think about this, because I recently had my daddy fly home from California, and he's a little bit more senior citizen. And we actually requested what are they called? Like the people with the wheelchairs, even though he doesn't really need a wheelchair, but he was connecting through Dallas. And we did that because he had a little tighter connection and we wanted to protect his mental health and getting from one plane to the other. So are there rules about, you know, when you can request, you know, aid and going across the airport for a connection?
No, I think they prefer that you mention it when you're, you know, doing your initial reservation and you're, you know, you're originally booking it. But, you know, you can show up and, you know, for whatever reason, say, you know what, I thought that I wouldn't have to walk so far and I'm not able to make the trek. And you just ask a gate agent and they'll take care of it for you. No problem. And it's all free of service or free of charge. So that's a good tip as well. You know, if you're traveling with somebody who's a little bit older, even if they complain about it, you know, and they say, no, I don't need it. It's always nice to have that, you know, requested anyway. And you can always just tell them when you get there, no, I don't need it. So.
As a pilot, do they let you know if there's somebody who is with the first aid assistance? Do you wait for them if they're in transit to you? Do you know?
You mean like if they're running late because of the
wheelchair? I'm just saying, like, if you know that somebody has made a connection and they're on in transit with one of those little, you know, the driver guys or the wheelchair guys, do they notify the ground crew so that they'll...
They don't notify us. That's kind of, at my airline at least, that's a function for the gate agent to handle. And when the gate agent decides that the flight is closed out...
And it doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. I have no control over that. So... Once we back away from the gate, then I'm in charge. But, you know, until then, I just let everything happen. I get out of the way. So, unless, of course, I know that it's your dad in a wheelchair, and then I'll do whatever I can to stop that operation.
Love you, Daddy.
So, great tips. Great tips. So, how about packing? Packing is always a big question and discussion. A lot of people would say, you know, I never... take anything carry on because it's such a hassle. I always check all my bags. On the other hand, many, many people, especially these days, say, I never check bags because it costs extra and you never know if it's going to show up where you are. So I do everything carry on completely. So what say you, Steve?
What say me? Well, my rule of thumb is I look at the flight also to see how much of a connection time I've got. And if I think I'm going to have to run through an airport, then I'll check my bag, especially, you know, and of course it all depends on how much you have to take. And it really, you know, I've gotten it down to where I'm a pretty lean packer, but there are some times where I may have to take two suits and two extra pairs of shoes and that kind of stuff. And so I just can't do a carry-on. But if I have the choice, I will try to carry it on if all possible. But sometimes I just kind of wing it and say, well, I think I'm going to have to rush a lot. So I'll check it and let the airline, you know, move it around for me.
Yeah.
Luckily, though, I've not had any real issues in the last couple of years.
Well, now you will. Now that you said that.
My bag's going to go to Tampa next week.
How about you?
I always check my bag. I'm that person. It's just easier for me as a woman. I have like makeup and shampoo and things. And, you know, I know a lot of people are pro like carry on, but I also have a bum knee. So for me, it's much easier for me to check my bag. Again, another reason why I got that Delta American Express, I get a check bag for free, whether I have Delta status or not. Thankfully I have some status, but you know, if that fades, I can still check my bag for free. And it's really nice. And, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had too much trouble. And it just saves me a lot of heartache of, especially if you don't get a great zone, am I going to get my bag on this flight? And, you know, you almost feel like it's a contest to see who can get on the plane first to shove that bag up there. And it just makes me much more relaxed to not have to fuss over, you know, elbowing people and getting to the front of the line in my zone to make sure that I'm going to get my bag on. You know, I mean, if you're zone 2 or zone 3 on Delta, your bag's probably not getting on the plane. So you might as well just try to check that bad boy.
That's true. And, you know, at least with Delta Airlines, if you show up to the gate and, you know, you think, well, you know what? And now I wish I'd checked my bag. And they're always asking for volunteers for checked bags. It doesn't norm. I think most airlines don't charge anything once you are already there at the gate. At least Delta doesn't. And the nice thing about that is that I think you have a much, much better chance that the bag is not going to get lost because they're just taking it from right there at the gate, taking it downstairs, and it's going right on the airplane. No,
that's correct. And it comes off first too, right? Yeah. With the priority bags. Right. So it's really convenient.
So there's a tip for you right there. Lisa, do you check or carry everything on?
Divas always check their bags, Jeff. Okay.
I shouldn't have even asked. Right?
No, you should have known. No, actually, I mean, it's really similar to what Steve said, just because of the connection. So I do usually check. And also I'm frequently carrying books in the bag with me that, you know, kind of weighed it down a little bit. But it's interesting. One of the people in our chat room is mentioning international flights. And one thing I was going to say that I've learned on international flights is don't assume when you check your bag that it's going to end up at your destination. You always have to remember when you get, you know, those cross transit border connections that you've got to go pick it up and kind of carry it, hand carry it through. I've been standing at the baggage claim multiple times in foreign countries when Americans have been standing there waiting for their bag and didn't realize in their intermediary flight that they needed to actually walk that through customs and get it onto the next flight. So it's a good thing to remember.
So you're telling me that if I flew from Atlanta to, let's say, Paris, and then somewhere on after that, that I would have to actually go and get my bag and then recheck it to go on to that?
Yeah. Connecting? So, for example, when I went to the Philippines, I connected through Tokyo. And so in Tokyo, I had to actually get my bag, take it through international customs there, and then just kind of drop it on another baggage, you know, that would be on the next flight. And so then it would be there for me in the Philippines. But a lot of people, for some reason, they don't tell you that necessarily when you check in. And so it's kind of like you can find out when you get to your ultimate destination and the bag's not there. So it's good always to ask it when you're checking a bag, do I need to check it, you know, in my intermediary stop? And I mean, almost every time that I fly that way, Steve will tell you too. That's a typical thing that you have to do, right, Steve?
Right. And I just learned something new on my latest trip, that something I hadn't heard. And it's what they call international transfers, where you don't actually go through customs, but you do have to pick it up and move it.
Yeah.
But you're not, it's, I don't know why you have to do it, but you actually have to physically get your bag and walk it over to a different carousel and put it on that one.
They do that in Atlanta. It's, you know, if you have a connecting flight, you're coming in internationally through Atlanta and then you're going somewhere else in the US, you have to go get your bag and recheck it. Thankfully, you are shoved into the area where you get your bag internationally. And so it's very clear that here are the bag carousels that get your bag. But I know not all airports are like that here in the States. And, you know, the JFK, you have to do that, you know, lots of them.
Yeah. I've experienced several times where you've had to actually go through customs and that kind of thing, go out of security, and then you recheck it on, you know, to your other destination. But this transfer thing is you stay inside the secure zone, but you have to move your bag. So that was good, but it was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, that's a kind of a surprise to me. But at least if you don't have to go through security, customs and immigration again, that's at least something. Wow. Okay. So you're about to go on this great trip. Let's say, Steve, you're about to go to the Holy Land. And you're thinking, well, I got a lot of U.S. dollars here, but I'm sure I'm going to need the local currency. So what do we do in this case? Do we get our money exchanged before we even leave the U.S. for our trip to the Holy Land? Or do we wait until we're over there? Or do we not even worry about cash?
You want me to answer that question?
Yeah.
Okay. I have found that there's quite a few countries that will accept American dollars as equal to their local currency. So I always research that first. But if it is a country where I have to have local currency, then I will wait and do it at an ATM. I don't buy the currency before I leave, because you'll pay a service charge, you know, in addition to a transfer fee, and I do not use the currency exchange places that you find in airports, because their fees are just really exorbitant. So I wait until I get away from the airport, and then I'll find a secure ATM and use that.
Okay.
Same as Steve. You know, if I have, like when I go to Europe, I always try to come home with a little bit of euro so I can hold on to it, because, you know, it's sort of like throwing a coin into the Trevi fountain. You hope that you're going to go back. So I always keep some euro around, so that, you know, when I do go back, it's not much. You know, I have like 20 or 30 euro right now. So very nominal amount, but enough that if I needed to do something with some cash, if I go to Europe, I have it. But first thing I do after I check in is go find a secure ATM and just pay that ATM fee and try to pull out as much as I can for the week, so that way I can minimize the ATM fees. But, you know, when I went to Dubai, 2 years ago, that's what I did. You know, I just went to an ATM, pulled out some cash, and it was enough cash to last me for the 4 days that I was there. And so it worked out great. You know, I went there, I had no dirham, but I needed some cash. So I went and pulled out 100 dirham, and it was $28, but it lasted me for 4 days because, you know, things were so cheap as far as food goes. So it worked.
I'm imagining that Lisa probably has like this closet full of these individual suitcases full of cash and whatever beans, the local currency is.
Things that, where you pay in beans. you know, It's funny because I probably do kind of the opposite of Steve, because I often do actually go to the international terminal at the big airline that I'm flying from in the US and get at least a little bit of money, because a lot of times when I'm flying with the relief agencies, our first, I mean, we're hitting the ground and we're immediately going off into like pretty remote areas that don't even have any kind of bank at all. So I will get a little bit of cash to have with me. The other thing just to say, though, when we're talking about ATMs, is to be sure to notify your bank at least a week in advance that you're going to be traveling, because, you know, the first thing they're going to do when they see an overseas thing, if you haven't notified them, is freeze your cards. And so, you know, call them and give them your itinerary or log onto your bank website so you don't get stuck over there with no access. And then, you know, definitely the other thing that I try to do is kind of keep, this is not the before and after, but I try to separate my cash and keep it in two different spots so that if something happens and I've got a backup stash, because unfortunately I've been in a situation where there was a theft, and it's not good when you lose all your money and your cards, you're stuck. So
not good at all. Micah in the chat room has a good tip. He said that before you travel internationally, make sure you have a credit card that does not charge foreign transaction fees.
Yeah, that's important.
So smart. Adds up so quickly if you don't.
Yeah.
What about and these things? Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say another thing to kind of keep in mind is I know my ATM card has a limit on how much I can withdraw from a foreign ATM in a given day. So, you know, if you know you have some expenses coming, you need to kind of plan out how you're going to get your money and when you're going to get it.
Good tip.
Because, yeah, I've run into a situation where I needed an extra $100 and I couldn't because I'd already maxed it out for the day. So I had to wait. And I had to wait until midnight of my home city for it to unlock, not midnight of where I was.
Nice. So a lot of us are addicted to these nice little technological devices called smartphones. Yeah, I know. We can't live without it. Lisa's petting hers.
Well, wow, that's why I got a watch, right?
Yeah, oh boy. Well, I can tell you, I know everybody here on the panel is very connected. And so, yeah, so that's a big question people have nowadays is like, okay, well, here's some advice for you. If you haven't already planned, you know, beforehand, make sure that you turn off your data roaming. Because you're going to get a very, very large bill unless, again, you've planned beforehand and have, you know, signed up for an international data roaming plan or you know, a different SIM chip or whatever. I don't know. Do you guys have any tips regarding that?
You know, I just want to say this is not really a tip, but it's kind of like a mental thing that I've come to in the last couple of years. I don't pay for data roaming when I'm traveling. I mean, I'm on the CatholicMom.com budget, which is about this big, and we don't have money for that. So, but I actually find it a relief not to be constantly connected when I'm in an international country. So, you know, if the places that I'm going to be at have Wi-Fi that I can check in at a couple times a day, like in the morning and at night, I find it enjoyable to simply travel and be out in God's glory and not constantly feeling like I have to be, you know, Instagramming everything. And so for me, those times when I'm not tethered all the time have become almost a retreat kind of travel that I actually look forward to. And, you know, we have to be connected to in a certain extent, but most of us can survive, you know, 6 to 8 hours without a constant connection. So that's just kind of where I am on that one now.
For me, it just depends on whether I'm traveling for work or pleasure. If it's work, then I have to stay connected. But I don't travel internationally for work, so that's not the issue. But internationally, then I'm like Lisa. I try to disconnect. Although when I was on my last trip, I was in Jordan and Israel, and the buses we were on had Wi-Fi, but the hotels didn't. So when we were going down the highway, I could check my email. But when I got to the hotel, it was they had it, but it wasn't really functional. So it was just weird. It was really weird that I could do it on the bus, but not in the room.
I've heard, I don't do a lot of international traveling myself. I haven't in many, many years, but you know, long before we had these fancy smartphone devices, but these built-in GPSs and maps and all that kind of stuff. If you're wandering around a big city, it's kind of nice to go, ooh, okay, where am I and how do I get back? So what if you don't have the data thing connected? Is there a way that you can, you know, maybe download maps to your device and still use the GPS antenna without using the cellular data?
It's getting there. I know Google Maps just recently rolled out the ability to download where I live. So like I was able to download most of Atlanta. So if I were ever to decide to not be online, I could get around Atlanta, but you can also do it for other cities you're going to visit. So you don't have to have data you can download in advance, or, you know, there's such thing as paper maps. Those still exist. But I'm one of those people that I always have, I turn my phone on. You know, I've been fortunate with the job I had up until the fall. They were paying for my cell phone bill and it was on international plan. So, and it was unlimited data internationally too. So it was amazing. But now, you know, really the prices have come down. And so if you can make it work for your budget, it really can be safe. I mean, I was in Italy a couple years ago and I was the only one with a phone, a working phone. And there were, I don't know, 30 of us on the trip. And long story short, we got majorly separated when we needed to be able to get in touch with this other person. And because they didn't have a working phone, it was a big problem. So, you know, things to consider if you're going with your family, like probably not an issue, but if you are with a big group and you're chaperoning people, smart to have a couple of people that might have some working devices.
I have
somebody
a
in the chat room.
Go ahead.
Somebody in the chat room was talking about how European cell carriers are a lot farther ahead in some of their, you know, flexibility than American carriers are. And I would agree with that. And one thing that I do is I have this little bitty, this is a little bitty Android phone that I carry, and I can just pop a SIM card in. And I don't have to mess with my own phone because I'm a little scared that I won't be able to get it back to where it was. phone that I just pop a SIM card in, and that allows me to communicate for the reasons that Sarah was talking about.
Yeah. You know? There are most, even in America now, most cell phone providers use phones that have GSM. There are some Sprint and Verizon that don't use GSM, although Verizon now, and it has been this way for a couple of years, if you buy an iPhone from them, they have the ability to use a GSM chip in it as well as the built-in antennas for the Verizon network. So, and I think they're transitioning to GSM as well, if they haven't already. But I do have an app on here called Here Maps that, again, you can download. And there are several apps like this where you can download before you go, while you have a connection or while you're at the hotel or your bus, you know, with Wi-Fi, and you can download the maps and then just make sure that you have your data turned off, but your GPS antenna will still work and will provide you information about where you are and where you want to go. So there's
Jeff, I've heard about that. Are you served ads, or what's the catch with that?
I don't think there are
really?
Any ads.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's,
I've been hearing about that.
I think it's a Nokia app, I think.
That's really cool. But yeah, definitely turn off your data. And, you know, when I travel, I turn my email off to fetch only, and I turn off all push notifications and do all that. So even though I've got access to, you know, a small bit of data, I just buy like a little hunk just to get me through. But I turn everything off. And then that way I can just, it's also nice because while I have a working device, I'm not getting any notifications. So it really allows me to be connected, but to be disconnected simultaneously. So I have the safety net without having the, you've got mail, you've got a tweet, you have a text, like I have zero notifications. And that's pretty freeing.
Another site that you can check out regarding the different countries that you might go. I'm sorry, Steve, I didn't mean to step all over you there.
I'm doing that to you. Sorry.
Prepaid data SIM card. I'll put a link. We'll have a link to this in the show notes. Where you can kind of click on the countries that you're going to visit and see what kind of cell phone systems they have and whether they use GSM and information about SIM cards and, you know, do they have good rates and do they have companies that, you know, you can buy a SIM card for that area, et cetera. So that's something to check out. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to say that international roaming can get out of hand very quickly. I managed to spend about $200 in half an afternoon, not realizing that it was roaming.
Yeah. Now there are a couple.
Best $200 ever.
There are a couple of companies here in the U.S. T-Mobile, and I think now Sprint is doing the same thing, where their regular plan now includes, you know, international roaming as well. I think it's at a lower speed, than, you know, the fastest data speeds. But, you know, that's something to look at if you're planning on doing a lot of international traveling, maybe, you know, worth, you know, moving over to one of those carriers.
You know, one thing to say too, it's not really about airline, but when I check in at hotels now, I actually now ask, like, can you put me someplace where I'm going to be able to have a reliable Wi-Fi connection? Mm-hmm. Because I've actually had to check in and out of hotel rooms a few times, you know, because you're way down from the router. So especially when you're traveling internationally, ask them there, you know, is this room going to be with a functional Wi-Fi? So
I ask, is there a room that has physical access to that router, and then I can turn off the Wi-Fi and just plug in a cord, and then I have all the data?
No, you're the guy that's taking off.
Yeah, I'm that guy.
No. But be careful about public Wi-Fi, you know, put up that notification too, you know, I mean, yeah. You got to be careful about what you have on the device that you're accessing public Wi-Fi with, because people can steal your personal information, whatever you have. So, you know, while it's great, Wi-Fi is good, it is public. So you have to be careful.
That's a good point. They do make actually little tiny, you know, miniature, like hotspot kind of things that have built-in security and, you know, what do they call that? When they scramble everything up,
they've encryption.
Been talking encryption. Thank you. They've been talking about that a lot lately, Apple and the FBI. I forgot what the name of this one that Leo Laporte always talks about. But anyway, there are ways to protect yourself. And the nice thing is, if you have a cellular connection, that's all encrypted. And also look in your web browser when you're surfing around. And if it has the HTTPS, which is the secure socket layer, that means that should be encrypted as well. So that's an important thing. Now, Mariana says her tip is don't go. No planning, no packing, no paying, no panic attack meds. Just stay home and watch the airline pilot guy. Thank you, Mariana. That's a good tip. Although I think that if you really want to travel, that's not very practical. Let's see. Oh, here's a good one. Nev in the chat room. I have only one airline travel tip. Never argue with security or immigration. I did once, just the once. Yeah, you'll never win. Never, ever. It's good travel advice. You know,
and I think to expand on that, like, just go up with a smile. Don't have your cell phone out. Like, look them in the eye. Be polite. You get through much more quickly. If you go up looking like you're irritated, it's not good. Say that Neville was irritated, but
oh no, Neville never gets irritated or goes on rants. Dom Bettinelli, our chief executive officer at executive director at SQPN, sent this blog post by Andreas Widmer, who was a former Swiss guard and successful businessman. And he had a blog post about his travel tips. And we've covered several of these, but he says, number one, because you just said it, Lisa, about dressing well. He said, dress well when you travel. You'll get treated very differently if you wear a tie and a jacket, especially when you travel for business. This reduces your luggage if you wear your suit jacket rather than having to pack it. And in my experience, if my experience is indicative, you'll regularly get free upgrades and other perks. So look nice when you're traveling, he says. And wear compression travel socks to avoid blood clots, especially on those very long flights. I wear those knee-high kind of socks, and I have for quite some time, just because I don't like my socks falling down on my calves. But they also have the the dual effect of providing compression as well. It's got a lot of good tips here. We'll put this link in the show notes as well, so you can check out all 15 links. But
you know, my favorite travel tip is I have outfits. I have travel outfits. I wear the same thing when I fly, like every single time, because I know it's comfortable. I know it works. I've got pockets. I do my thing. And then I have I pack the same outfits too. So I know it's really dorky, but I pack my suitcase exactly the same every time. But it helps me from forgetting to pack something. So I have it's what I do. I have my uniform, I call it, and it works.
Hey, I have a travel tip for you. Yeah, have you ever seen Father Roderick and how he travels and how little he travels with? become a priest and we wear everything is black. Absolutely everything that you have is black. And it matches everything. So, of course, that's not very practical either. Go ahead, Steve.
I had a job one time where I had to commute every week from Tulsa to Boston for 2 years, then Tulsa to Houston for 2 years. And so I was packing every Sunday night and then, you know, traveling throughout the week. And I had to start keeping a checklist because I would forget something. And remembering I had put it in the bag, but I was remembering it from a previous trip. And then I'd show up and I was like, no socks. So I started keeping checklists and I still use them, even though I don't travel as regularly as that. Still pretty regularly, but not as regularly. But I still go over the checklist because it's like, I almost left the belt or I almost left this. And I find it really helpful to have a checklist.
That's a good idea. And many of those watching are part of the APG community and, you know, are into aviation and travel and are a lot of them are pilots themselves. And we all know how important checklists are. So, very good point.
Yes. Thank you for your checklist.
Well, you know, I think it might be time for our tips of the week. Thank you, Pat Goan, also a podcaster, host of Among Women, and a Catholic author as well. So who wants to start with their pick of the week, their travel-related pick of the week? Shall I start?
Hello? There you go, Jeff. I want to hear yours.
Okay. Because, you know, why he says that is because usually I don't have one. but I do this time. My pick is a website, and it's full, just packed full of great stuff. This man is, he calls himself Johnny Jett, and that's johnnyjett.com. And he comes on every week to the Tech Guy podcast and talks with Leo Laporte, the host of that show. And he talks about travel, as we're doing here today. And he's always got great tips. And he has his travel app of the week, his travel tip of the week, etc., travel website of the week. And all that is there. There are too many of them to list, but I've learned a bunch of great things listening to him. And he has it all for free on his website, johnnyjett.com. So you should check out that website. I think you'll find a lot of good stuff there. So that's my tip of the week, johnnyjett.com. Who's next?
I can go next if you guys want.
Yeah.
So for people who don't memorize the schemes of the seats on airplanes, seatguru.com is most excellent. You can figure out ratings on the seat that you might choose. So I love going to SeatGuru, you know, if it's an airplane that I'm not super familiar with the layout. You know, I happen to really like the plane that Captain Jeff flies. I know that one very well. It's out of Atlanta very often, but, you know, great place to see like, is your seat going to be a little more cramped because, you know, it's got a different sort of, pull out table, like instead of the pop down off the back of the seat. So you're going to have like a couple inches less room. Are you going to have like less leg room? Does it not lean back? All these different things. So SeatGuru rates your seats. You can make sure you've picked a good winner, especially if you're going on a long flight.
Very good. And of course, you have to know exactly what model of the airplane that you're on, though, for that to really work. Or can you just put your flight number in there and they'll know what?
I think you can put your flight number in nowadays, okay. And it works.
Good.
But you know, when you're booking your travel, it's really easy. It's there within the website to let you know what exactly your plane is going to be, and so it should be. It's great to open up in two tabs on your browser and helps you make a really solid choice.
Excellent. Well, here's a tip for you. If you get that window seat on a Airbus 320, you're thinking this is going to be a great seat because you have lots of legroom and everything else. At least in my experience at my airline, that they didn't put any padding at all in that seat. I don't know if that's just the for safety or whatever, but it's like sitting on a board. So I'm sure that Seat Guru would probably tell you that information. I didn't know that. I thought, man, I had scored big. No. So, okay. That's a good pick. Thank you, Sarah. And Steve.
My pick of the week is I've recently started to be concerned with my hearing and flying a lot like I do with all the noise that comes with it. Huh? So I bought a pair of noise canceling headphones and just like those. And I used them for the first time when I was going over to Jordan and Israel. And I was just absolutely astounded at the difference it made, not only in just in the noise and my ability to sleep, but just the stress level was a whole lot less.
Oh my gosh, I love these things. I have had a pair of the Bose forever, and my other ones just finally broke after 10 years. So I got a new pair, and they just make all the difference in the world. Totally agree, Steve.
I mean, they're a bit expensive. I mean, it's $300 for a set of headphones, but I wish I had done it 10 years ago.
That is a good tip. Yeah, you need to protect your hearing and do it while you're young, because when you get to be older, let's say, you know, like in your silver years, like I am, it's too late. You know, you need to do it when you're younger. And Mike Kuiper's cracked a good one there in the chat room, saying that I had room and board on my seat.
Wah, wah. What a
boom! Rim shot. Inga, put the rim shot in right here. Okay, Lisa. Last but not least.
Mine is a little bit different from everybody else's, but if you're somebody who's always wanted to experience international travel, but you're a little afraid to do it, I really recommend traveling with Unbound. You can find them at unbound.org. They're a great relief agency that I was in the Philippines with them, and they plan these awareness trips for their sponsors, but you don't have to be a sponsor to travel with them. And it's very inexpensive international travel with a wonderful component that you actually get out and meet the people who live in that country. And so it's a really, really great way to see the world, but also to really kind of, you do some touristy stuff, but you also really have an experience of the culture of that place that you're looking to visit. So it's unbound.org, and just take a look for their awareness trips.
Wow. That's a great tip. Thank you, Lisa. Well, this has been a great show. It's kind of short. I know that's kind of unusual when I'm the host of anything, but that's kind of the point of these new shows that we're trying out, called Let's Talk. Try to keep it short and sweet. So thanks again for joining us today for the show. And again, Lisa Hendy, tell us how we can find out more about you.
Oh, just, you know what? Do a search for Lisa Hendy on like any social media, H-E-N-D-E-Y. And I'd love to connect with you.
Excellent. Steve Nelson.
You can look at my blog, which is everythingesteban.com.
Outstanding. It's a great blog. And last but not least, Sarah. Fabulous.
You can find me at Catholic Drinky, DRINKIE. You can find me on Twitter or at my blog, CatholicDrinky.com.
And of course, I'm the Airline Pilot Guy, and on the social networks and website, it's AirlinePilotGuy.com. And until next time, wishing you a great week. Take care and God bless.